You're listening to the Apple Insider Podcast.
Welcome to the Apple Insider Podcast. I'm Victor, and joining me is William Gallagher.
Hello. Oh, hang on. That was normal. That was regular. Thank you. Hello, Victor. I'm William. How are you doing? What's going on?
I am so delighted you're here with me today.
Right. You make it sound like because something terrible is going
to happen. It's just a great occasion when we can get together and make time to join all of you listeners and really talk about what's going on. This is so much fun for me.
I do look forward to it, I've got to say. Yes.
Best part of my week.
Excellent.
It is. So, do you wear glasses by any chance?
No. I tried and decided no, I didn't. So, do you? I've realized I don't know that, actually. Why do we not know that about each other? Do you wear glasses?
I do not. I do not.
Well, that's why. Because you notice when somebody does, don't you? But if they don't, they could have just taken it off that moment.
Maybe. But Apple glasses, which we've talked about for ages and ages and ages, are rumored. This is a could have. Now, obviously, we don't know the strength of this rumor, but could have hidden cameras and removable earphones.
Right. You see, now this is actually one reason I was looking forward to it in particular this week, talking to you, because I don't quite grasp that. There'll be glasses that you can bolt on bits to or what, because it doesn't seem like, what are the names of those lenses you get in the back of iPhones? Mount lenses, moment lenses. Yeah. You can just stick one of those on whenever you want to use whatever it is.
Right.
Is that wrong?
Macro lens kind of thing. That's for the phone. So where are we getting this from? We're getting this from a patent application entitled Electronic Devices Having Electrically Adjustable Optical Layers. That was the first patent about these kinds of glasses. And it talked about hiding components, right? It said that sensors, cameras, other elements may be required within an electronic device to drive certain features, obvious so far, but that these openings could be hidden using windows or optical coatings and things like this.
So less bolt-on lenses, more a bit like the Hitchhiker's Guide's the glasses that turn black when you're in danger.
That was the first patent application. Oh. The second application is for a product that's called Display System Having an Audio Output Device, which talks about detachable speaker units.
What, like headphones?
Right. So if you had earphones that were a part of the headset but could be removed from the headset.
Okay. It feels now, less like you'd be wearing these glasses than threading them around your head.
So classically, AR goggles or VR goggles have been the head-mounted display with a headband or earpieces, and then earphones that extend down from those earpieces or headband to pop into your ears. And that's kind of clunky, a little bit odd looking, but that's how they've been. And Google, with Google Glass, attempted to change that a little bit by going with, blanking on the name, it's sort of a transcranial vibration thing. I'll tell you in 1 second. Oh, these are in the Aftershocks running headphones that I use, the technology. Bone conduction.
Oh, so subcutaneous transmitters kind of things.
Well, not subcutaneous, because that would apply underneath the skin. What it does is that by placing, instead of having a speaker cone, instead of pushing air against your ear canal, what they're doing is that they're putting the vibration directly on the surface of your skin, and it's vibrating through the bone and conducting into the ear canal that way.
Okay.
Instead of air vibrating to move the eardrum.
No, I'm just picturing it.
It's the vibration is coming through the bone and moving the eardrum to create the sound.
Is this really a convoluted way for Apple to get me to yet again replace my AirPods?
I mean, the question is, would they do that, or would they use some form of AirPod with this, and that's the detachable portion?
Right, that makes sense. Leverage all their different products together. Yeah. Okay, I can't quite get, you said about windows and closing and things.
So the idea is, if you have a bunch of cameras, they're pretty gross looking, right? They put circles all over an otherwise smooth and clean device.
Yes.
The other problem is that when people look at that and know that there's a camera, it changes the tenor of the conversation. For instance, I wore Google Glass into a paintball shop.
Okay.
And the paintball shop had four security cameras aimed at the counter where I was standing. But because I had Google Glass on my head, and it was completely out of battery, the thing had run down, it wasn't doing anything, it was just there. Right. The fellow got really apprehensive and said, "Are you filming me? Are you filming me? You can't be filming me in here. You can't film me." And I said, "First of all, it's out of battery. And second of all, you've got four cameras filming me. I can film you. You can't film me."
Okay.
But there is something to this, right? If you took Google Glass into a cafe or bar or something like this, people would be rightly somewhat apprehensive that they're now being filmed. Now, it's entirely possible they were already being filmed and didn't notice it, or that everyone's got a cell phone camera and filming could be taking place. But something about the head-mounted camera bothers people immensely. And that's totally fine and even understandable. So what Apple's talking about here is, what can they do to preserve clean product lines? What can they do to preserve some functionality and talk about that? So they're talking about either hiding the cameras behind little mechanical doors or even behind electrochromatic glass, where they can trigger the glass to become opaque or transparent with electricity, which could then act like a shutter for the camera, lens cover for the camera, if you will.
I have a feeling that nobody is going to look to see whether your lens is open. They're just going to say, "You're wearing Apple glasses."
Well, that's exactly what happened with Google Glass, and especially with me, where it was completely out of power, and it was still an issue. The thing about this is, it doesn't necessarily mean this is what the product will be. It means that Apple is trying to go ahead and secure IP on all of the different things they could do.
Oh, I see. All right, good point. Okay. So it's too early for me to worry yet about my fashion conscious status in my local town. Okay.
No, I think you should start worrying about that immediately.
Different reasons, though. So, yes. No, that's fine. Yes. Do we have any idea of anything? You said there was a second patent. Was there a third? Is there a whole series of these?
No. At this time, we really just have the two. Focusing on hiding sensors and detachable ear bits, cups, things like that. You know, one of the things people have done in the past, and of course is part here, is that speaker units could be part of ear cups on a pivot that you could adjust or raise or lower, things to detach. It's just different ways of approaching it.
Okay. I'm slightly ambivalent about it until we see what use they are to us. For it. I think the technology could be as clever as it likes, but if there's no benefit to me, then I won't be wearing it just to be wearing it. So
it's true. This is a problem. But this is the problem that we've always had around virtual reality and augmented reality, is that it's not exactly clear what all the uses are. And until we have a use that requires day-to-day wear and is easier than just looking at the phone that we already have, then that transition won't happen. Now, it already has with AirPods, right? People totally wear AirPods throughout the day, even when they're not listening to anything at all.
And, which I don't like, but it is being done. Yeah.
Right. I'm not commenting on whether you like or don't like it. I'm commenting that it's certainly a thing. And so it's entirely... some benefit is going to have to happen to convince people to do the same thing with glasses.
I can tell you, actually, I'm sorry, I may have mentioned this to you before, but it happened again today. When I was cooking breakfast, I had AirPods in, listened to Mary Chapin Carpenter, and so gently the music faded away and Siri whispered a text message into my head. And it was like a friend was telepathically communicating. I really liked it, and it was so much better than looking at a screen to read it. God, first time I've ever really thought, because I'm such a fast reader, text is usually quicker, but putting down the frying pan, picking up the phone, or even turning the watch. You have so many ways to text me, and so few people do.
And that, of course, is your reminder for all of our listeners to please, please sign William up for SMS alerts for all kinds of services. Let's make sure that he gets all the texts he can handle.
Yeah, that may not be a very big number, but okay. Right.
Dollar Shave Club. When I talk about Dollar Shave Club, I can't stress enough the quality of their products. They've spent years developing, crafting, and refining everything. And they have everything that I use to look, feel, and smell my very best. You name it, they have it, I use it. Now, I've been using the Executive Razor, which is a metal handle, which adds a nice bit of weight to it, and their blades, shave butter, prep scrub, and really is quality stuff. One of the things that really contributes, there are really two ingredients to a good shave, and they are good prep with a really slippery shave cream or shave butter, and then a sharp blade. And the shave butter and the shave lather that they have is really slick. It's slippery. It makes the razor glide, and that contributes really well to a good shave because you don't want to use pressure. You just want to have the razor glide over the surface of your skin to cut hair. And the other component is because they're a subscription service and you get the blades always when you need them, you can get rid of a blade the minute it begins to pull or tug, and that way you're not trying to prolong the life of something that should have been replaced ages ago. Doing those two things will give you the best shaves of your life. And as I say, they keep you automatically stocked up on the products you want to use. You can get what you want whenever you need it, whether that's once a month or a few times a year. You never have to waste time at a store wondering if you're getting the right thing, whether it's any good. And as a Dollar Shave Club member, I know that what I'm getting is the highest quality. And right now, you can put the quality of Dollar Shave Club's products to the test. Their Ultimate Shave Starter Set has basically everything you need for an amazing shave. The Executive Razor, Shave Butter, Prep Scrub, Post-Shave Dew. The best part is that you can try it for just $5. And after that, the restock box ships regular-sized products at regular prices. Get your Ultimate Starter Set for just $5 at dollarshaveclub.com/appleinsider. That's dollarshaveclub.com/appleinsider. Apple earned 66% of the entire smartphone market's profits in 2019.
Allegedly.
So yeah. This research comes to us from Counterpoint Research.
Yes, we've been doing it for a long time. We've covered them on Apple Insider many, many times over the years. You know, they work hard at this. And their estimate is in the last quarter, 66% of the profits.
Okay, so there are a few things that go into this, right? Mm-hmm. One of them is that Apple is a little unique. They're a single provider of iOS devices, mm-hmm, versus competing smartphone devices, which are pretty much Android's your only game in town. Windows Phone is gone. There are no strong competitors for iOS besides Android. And among Android, there are multiple sellers. You can buy from Samsung, Huawei, Oppo, Vivo, Xiaomi, right?
I was struggling on the last one. Yes, I see your point. So you're saying the Android thing is actually diluted just by the fact that there are lots of manufacturers.
Right. So the remaining 34% of profits was divided among Samsung, Huawei, Oppo, Vivo, and Xiaomi. Of those, Samsung had the highest bit. They had 17% of that 34%.
Nice. That 17 instead of 66 is still pretty... I know which one of the two I would prefer, shall we say.
Now, what would be interesting to me is if we were talking unit sales as opposed to profit.
Sure.
Right? And the reason for that is because it would be telling to know how many devices are in actual users' hands, not just how much the company's made on those devices. And the reason I say that is that Samsung sells, you know, they have some flagship phones, right? They have Galaxy Note 10, whatevers. They have all those fancy things. But they also sell a lot of affordable phones, inexpensive phones.
Oh, I see. So you'd be curious to know what
They outsell Apple by unit sales, but make much less because they were selling them for much less, right? There's sort of a fuller picture here.
Yeah, I think you have to assume that there are more Android phones sold than iPhones. You just don't know what the figures would be.
Right, and in the past, that kind of thing has been, you know, there's been some variance, but it tends to float around half and half when you take into account all of the Android sellers.
I honestly thought it was more Android, but
It is sometimes and sometimes not, and it sometimes you could divide it up by country. And so, if you look at North America, for example, then you'll see that iPhone is outselling Android. But if you look at worldwide, you'll see it flip. All that is to say there's a lot of way to slice this data. And that iPhone tends to sell less in unit sales as opposed to all Android phones when we're talking worldwide. So you're correct on that. But this profit bit is an interesting thing. And one of the things that I was curious about is the other day, an Android fanboy was talking with me and was saying that Apple, the only reason that Apple is even succeeding in this is because they're charging so much for the iPhone. And so I was sort of looking at where prices have gone over time. Now, obviously, the first iPhone, you know, we call it 2G, was the first model, was unsubsidized and expensive. Over time, phones were subsidized, and so
I'm sorry. I'm still thinking about that guy who was talking to you. Somebody's actually said to you that if iPhones were cheaper, they wouldn't sell as well as they do.
Don't try and reason it out.
Okay.
Basically, he was hurt that Apple is succeeding as well as they are when Android is clearly superior to him.
Well, I'm sure it is to him, and I would say iOS is to me.
But
balance
what
of
I
evidence
was thinking
is on my
was,
side. But, yeah.
So if we talk about profit, then we're also talking a little bit about what average selling cost is, or initial sales price of an iPhone model is, right?
Well, we can. We don't have the data to back it up, because I don't know what the cost of a Samsung Galaxy Note 10 is, even if we knew the split of things. But yes, obviously the per unit price is significant to the profits.
All right. Well, I was just looking at iPhone pricing.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So at launch, an iPhone 7 was $649 to $849. Mm-hmm. At launch, an iPhone 8 was $649 to $849.
Okay. iPhone 9 at all? No?
iPhone.
Let's skip that one.
Okay. iPhone X, if you will. No, iPhone 10.
Thank you. Okay. Yes.
$1,000 to $1,149. Okay. Now, that's really the outlier, because as we know, iPhone 10 really did. It did, you know, other phones, when the new ones announced, the old model sticks around as the lower cost model. Price gets reduced and it hangs around. iPhone 10 did not. iPhone 10 was 1 year only. Yes. iPhone XR, $749 to $899.
Okay, I'm still holding these figures in my head. Yes.
Okay. Well, let me give it to you as a point of reference. iPhone XR, $749 to $899, as opposed to iPhone 8, $649 to $849.
Okay. Yes.
At the low end, we went up by $100. At the high end, $50 difference.
Okay.
iPhone 11, $699 to $1,099.
Seems a bigger spread when you put it like that.
Bigger spread, but the bottom end became more affordable than the previous year.
Okay, that's true.
So compared to iPhone 8 or iPhone 7, $699 versus $649, not that big a difference.
This is a side point, but I have to say I deeply love my iPhone 11 Pro. Mm-hmm. I thought I liked my XS Max, actually, but I adore the 11 Pro. So even though when you mention the figures of how much less you could spend on an iPhone, I am fine with having gone out on that mortgage level.
What I'm suggesting is that as much as people bemoan prices growing over time, as much as people say iPhones are too expensive now, iPhones have gotten too expensive, no one can afford an iPhone. If you look historically, there's an iPhone model that's priced. If you could afford an iPhone in 2016, you can afford an iPhone today.
Yeah. I don't know what it's like in the States, though, but here the decline of subsidized offers, cell phone deals, and all this stuff. It took longer for those to go away here than I think it did in the States.
I'll answer that in a moment, but I want to stay with my point that prices have not changed as dramatically as people think. Now, this is ignoring things like XS Max or 11 Pro Max or whatever it is, that are the giant-sized phones and the huge numbers that it's possible to pay out for a maximally equipped, maximum spec model. But on the whole, pricing has remained more or less within a small margin of error, they're kind of flat, that it's not as bad as people suggest. And I want to add to that how long phones are supported for. Okay.
I'm still stuck on the... I think your argument works for the base price of these things. But
and I think that's
that
useful.
Works. Okay. Mm-hmm. But carry on. Yes.
Okay. iOS 7 was more or less around, you know, a year, basically, 2 years. iOS 8, the iPhone 5C and 5S, right? They were supported in iOS 7, iOS 8, iOS 9, iOS 10. Then the 5C dropped off. So it got, 4 years of support on that. The iPhone 5S made it for 6 years and got all the way to iOS 12. The iPhone 6 stopped being supported with iOS 13. So it got basically 6 years of support. The 6S is still supported in iOS 13. And that's a phone from 2015. Basically, we have phones going back 4 and 5 years that are still supported.
No, basically, the decade is running out so fast is what that tells me. I've got an iPhone 6 on the desk in front of me. That was my main phone until not very long ago. Mm-hmm. Where did the time go?
When you think about buying a phone and not taking advantage of offers from carriers, which you just mentioned, I'll address in a second, you're buying a phone, you can hold on to it for quite a long time. And if you chop that $649 or $699 fee and divide it up and amortize it across all the years that you're going to use that phone,
That works if you can afford to buy it in the first place. But also, I don't know what the figure is for Samsung's or how long Samsung supports things or any Android.
Well, so Android does...
Not so much.
Many Android phones receive updates a little bit, but never change their major version number. That is, they never move from Android 7 to Android 8, or Android 8 to Android 9, or Android 9 to Android 10. The phones that do that are the Google Pixels.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
The Essential phone did for some time, but now has declared that for their Essential phone, which was the first model they launched a couple of years ago, that they're no longer going to continue supporting it after Android 10. And so that's kind of it. Everyone else, when you buy the phone, that's the version you can expect to be stuck with, and any kind of update that you're going to get is going to be a surprise. And the answer is, they release phones often enough, you should consider getting a new phone if you want the new version. Mm-hmm. It is. And or there are alternatives. You know, if you're so inclined, you can unlock your phone's bootloader and flash it with a ROM from that's based on AOSP, Android's open source program, and you know, load your own. I for example, have it's a Google Nexus 6P, which was made by Huawei, and it was running Android 8, but was never going to see Android 9 or Android 10. And so I unlocked its bootloader, and I flashed something called Pixel Experience 10 on it, which is very much a beta ROM, and have been able to run Android 10 on it now. And it's now got worse battery life as a result. I actually had the Nexus 6P with good battery life. Most of them had trouble. And actually running this ROM has now made my battery worse on it. But that's the trade-off.
There is just no possibility that I could ever be bothered to go through all of that. I'll stick with the phone I've got until I can buy another one. But
I do these things for research. I really wanted to see what was going on with Android 10. And specifically, there's a Google Recorder app which does voice dictation amazingly well. And
it's
all doing it in device. It doesn't send it to the cloud. And I wanted to see that.
And have you yet seen it enough to be able to tell us whether it's brilliant?
I want to see it on iOS. I want to see it replicated for iOS because I really do think it is brilliant. It's a great way for me to... You know how when you sit down and you begin to type and maybe the words don't flow from your keys, but if you just paced the room a little bit, speaking out loud off the cuff, you'd get enough inspiration to be able to write your piece?
Well, actually, no. Not to be awkward, I think through the keys. But yes, I know many, many people who would work the same way as you.
Right, so that's ideal for them.
Yes. I'm just a freak who can't type yes. Okay.
I'm going to hold you to that, freak.
Okay. Oh, what's the name of it, by the way?
You wanted to ask about carrier deals. So in the United States, we formerly had subsidized deals and have ended all subsidies and changed to a model where you basically get interest-free loans from the carrier and you pay them off per month and until they're fully paid off. And then your phone bill goes down accordingly.
Okay, yes.
And every carrier offers them, and every carrier offers other things to sweeten the deal, typically a buy one, get one offer. So, for example, when I upgraded my phone to iPhone XR, I also upgraded my wife's to XR by virtue of a buy one, get one deal. The deal was if you buy an iPhone XR and you add a new line of service to your plan, then you get a free iPhone XR in addition. So I opened up a line for one of my daughters and got a free iPhone XR, which I then gave to my wife.
Right. And what does your daughter use then?
iPhone SE.
Oh, okay. All right. So you haven't just opened up a line and denied her a phone. That would be cruel.
That would be
parenting.
Awkward. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That sounds like a really good deal. So I wasn't really conscious of any deals worth speaking of going on here when I was buying. Doesn't mean that there aren't other times, but that's much better than I would have thought. That's cool.
Yeah. No, and when I got the iPhone 11 for myself, there was a deal that I was able to take advantage of.
All right. So if you at least shop around a little bit, you can do okay.
Oh, absolutely. And we run those articles about how to shop around.
Of course we do. Yes.
Good on some Apple Insider site, I guess.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. See?
I learned something.
I know.
Apple Insider. Excellent.
You're about to learn something more. Atto. This segment is brought to you by Atto. Now, Atto technology is the power behind the storage. And what Atto does is Atto provides Mac users with high-performance network and storage connectivity, and they've been doing it for over 30 years. Their premium connectivity solutions for Macs include a wide range of low-latency, highly optimized Thunderbolt and PCIe options. The media industry has relied upon Atto connectivity for over 30 years, and you can too. Atto has low-latency, high-performance solutions I just mentioned, and they work both for current Macs and the upcoming new Mac Pro. Whether it's Thunderbolt, Hostbus, Fiber Channel, you're ready to unleash the power of the new Mac Pro. Visit Atto.com to discover why Atto is the power behind the storage.
If I may. Funny you should mention the Mac Pro. I mean, who's talking about the Mac Pro these days? But I've been checking Apple stores here in the UK to see what was going on. They were selling the trash can Mac Pro until just a couple of days ago, definitely after the announcement of the new one. But that's gone, and I asked them when they're getting in the new one. And here in Birmingham, so it's central England, they said they simply don't know. Because it's not a consumer thing, they're not expecting to get one for months. And London, one of the London stores, there are several, one of them will get a Mac Pro in the screen. Manchester has, I think, at least one store that will get one. And Birmingham is apparently arguing with other Apple stores over which one of them gets it. I just want to see the Pro Display XDR and how gorgeous it is, so that I can then come back to my terrible cheap monitor here and regret everything.
Yeah, I'm still interested in knowing what other computers the display will work with.
Yes, because you were talking about this, isn't it? It will work. Is it the iMac that it will work with, but at a lower rate?
But also the iPad, I believe it works with.
Oh, really? Interesting. I wonder if that's at lower resolution.
I don't know, but I'm curious.
Yeah.
One of the things that I like a lot is Apple HomeKit.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I'm some frustrations, but yes, I like it very much.
Well, so I have used Amazon Alexa devices and smart home with Amazon Alexa. And I have a Google Nest Mini or a Google Mini and have got some devices working with it. And one of the valid concerns people have about those devices is security and privacy. Hmm. And of course, Amazon says they've done lots to address privacy, although they keep having problems with their Ring products. And Google hasn't really talked about what they're doing to address privacy, but, you know, they're Google. What do they need to do? They're big, yes. Right? And Apple has always had HomeKit based around privacy first, where things, for the most part, work primarily on the home network and don't have to go to the cloud to function. There are some exceptions. There are some devices that work a little differently and do require that. But that's kind of HomeKit's basis, is that things are secured. And that's been the basis of the initial authentication chip and the eight-digit codes and things like this, is that it's around security. And Apple has open sourced. They've decided to publish an open source version of the HomeKit accessory development kit, which allows more users to experiment with the development of HomeKit accessories. They've begun posting portions of this HomeKit accessory development kit to GitHub. GitHub is, of course, the open source code repository that is now owned by Microsoft.
Oh, yes. I'd forgotten about that aspect. Yes.
Anyone can use the open source ADK to prototype smart home devices. So if you have a device in mind that you want to build, you can go ahead and use it to get started. Cool. If you want to build it for your own home, you can use it. Accessory managers can also use the manufacturers. Accessory manufacturers can also use the open source ADK to test products before formally joining the HomeKit MFI program, which means they can make proof of concept evaluations before going through the whole process of becoming an MFI partner.
This sounds great. Everybody wins.
Mm-hmm. Anything that's going to actually be sold, any individual or company who's actually going to sell compatible accessories, have to use the commercial version of the kit.
Okay. I have no idea what the cost of that is, but better to have loved and lost, tried it out. Yes.
Going through the commercial program means there are costs, but it also means that there are certifications and approvals and things like this. So it's all the stuff that you'd really want to do and is as a part of managing what's going to be sold and given the seal of approval and the HomeKit stamp and all of that, right? Using the logo program, the whole thing. But making an open source program is an interesting one. So separate from this news, in the past, there have been some parts where Apple has made efforts for home hobbyists and manufacturers who want to do proof of concept stuff. And they released bits of it in the past. And one of the other things they did was they allowed authentication to happen without the authentication chip, software authentication. And so there are people who have put together bits that make HomeKit possible for MQTT devices or make HomeKit possible for custom firmwares for Sonoff devices. And they're basically just hacking the firmware and putting the firmware out there and saying, this thing will change this device from being a Sonoff device to being a Sonoff device running HomeKit-enabled firmware. You're at your own risk. Have fun. And I wonder if this open source ADK will make that easier. So I'm going to talk to some of those developers and find out. Because I quite like the idea of there being people experimenting at the edges. This is where the fun happens. This is where the future gets made, is when you release something and people can tinker with it and do their custom adaptations for their custom weird bits of hardware, and then it becomes something interesting. You know, we would never have gotten motorized window blinds in HomeKit if it hadn't been for people trying to figure out how to handle the fact that they got window treatments for windows that are too tall to handle manually. Mm. And the ceiling fan space, for example, is still one of the spaces in HomeKit that is really weak. Hunter Fans is kind of the only game in town for ceiling fan, and they only address it in one way: buy a new fan.
Yes. Okay.
So
I was about to make some sarcastic comment about motorized blinds, how we can just get it. But actually, I've never been able to get the non-motorized blinds to work in my office. I just have a bare window. If I could just fit it once, and that a button worked, I am drawn to this prospect. Okay.
Well, IKEA, of all people, were interested in the motorized blinds and started working on making that happen.
Yeah, I'm uncertain about IKEA at the moment because I gave quite a good review to their they're very cheap, very adaptable mains plugs. What would you call them in the States?
Outlets. Yeah,
outlets. Thank you. But actually, when it goes wrong, they're a royal pain trying to set back up again. And I must admit, I've given up on one of them.
So, well, and I've had similar problems with Belkin stuff. So
right, yeah, that's disappointing.
You know, here we are. Yeah, okay. But what I want to tell you, and this is important. So Amazon has been doing this thing where in their Echo Plus 3, they put a Zigbee radio inside. Zigbee is a wireless communication protocol and firmware that takes place in a different space than Wi-Fi and Bluetooth. It doesn't have the same kind of pairing requirements, and it doesn't have the IP setup issues that you get with Wi-Fi. And so it's a low-power, longer-range spec that's interesting. And the Philips Hue lights are actually Zigbee, and that's why you have the Hue bridge to pair with the bulbs.
Oh, right.
And IKEA's bulbs, in fact, are Zigbee, which is why they work with the Philips Hue bridge.
Interesting. Okay.
So there on one piece of news, there's this open source accessory development kit working with Amazon, who likes to use it because they want to. What the goal of this is? For the open source kit is for people to be able to experiment and build stuff, which is great because Apple desperately, I think, needs to have more developers experimenting and building stuff in HomeKit. The second piece of news that I was sort of alluding to is that Apple has joined a Zigbee Alliance group with Amazon and Google and IKEA and others called Project Connected Home over IP. Now, that name is probably a mouthful, so let's just abbreviate it. Let's call it by its initials. CHOIP.
Okay. CHOIP.
Sorry. Connected Home over IP.
Yep. You heard it here first and possibly also last, but CHOIP it is. Yes.
Exactly. So the industry group is going to take an open source approach for the development and implementation of a new unified connectivity protocol. The member companies expect that the joint approach to developing the new technology will accelerate the development of the protocol and deliver benefits to the manufacturers and consumers faster. So this isn't to replace HomeKit. What it looks like to me is that this protocol is going to complement existing technologies along with HomeKit. So we have Bluetooth and BLE as a protocol. We have Wi-Fi. And now we'll have this Zigbee radio as a part of this alliance.
Okay. That all sounds interesting.
Now, formerly Google Thread and Google Wave were Google's attempt to try and replace Zigbee. And they even had a firmware that was based on a version of Android called Brillo that would replace the firmware on a Zigbee device. And they were trying to do that. So this is the first goal of this specification is to use Wi-Fi up to and including Wi-Fi 6 and include Google Thread over its 2.4 gigahertz radios and IP implementations for Bluetooth Low Energy for the network and physical wireless products. They're basically trying to bundle all of these things into one standard so that Alexa, Google, Apple, and all of the associated manufacturers can all write to the same thing and work across all the platforms.
What do you think the odds are?
Well, I want it to work. Mm. I want it to work because what I've been doing is trying to buy devices that are platform agnostic that work with Amazon and Google in the eventuality that something bad happens to HomeKit and it peters out. Because HomeKit isn't just Apple. You know, Apple's not going to give up on HomeKit, but it also relies on these third-party manufacturers making products for it. And if they stop, then where are we?
Stuck with the products we've already bought?
Yes, but unable to expand. And that's not good for the future of a platform. So I've been buying these things that work across all three as sort of my lifeboat plan of giving in to having smart home through someone else. I don't really want to do that. So my hope is that this plan works so that I don't have to worry about that. That all the things will be all compatible, and because it'll be a standard that the big three have adopted, it will live on because there is no need for a lifeboat. That manufacturers would be silly not to do it. And even if they were doing it because their intended customer is an Amazon or a Google customer, it would work for HomeKit as a byproduct, yeah. Which is still acceptable to me.
Yeah. I think this is one where I should put a pin in it for a year and see what's happened.
Well, yeah, absolutely.
But fingers crossed. Yes, I see your point.
So, two things to be hopeful about.
Yes. In this crazy, mixed-up world, we've now got two things.
Given all that's happened in 2019, two things to be hopeful for is not bad.
I'm not passing it up, no.
Of course, now I have to dash your hopes.
Oh, okay.
I have to break your hopes and dreams.
Okay, what do you know about my hopes and dreams?
Allow me to continue for just a moment, and then we'll see how heartbroken you are.
Not sure how wise this of me, but yes, okay, go ahead.
New research, it's not just me saying this, research, published in Current Biology, suggests that night mode user interfaces are detrimental to your getting a good night's sleep.
Oh, detrimental?
Yes, that means bad.
Yes, thanks. I was clear on that point, just not the application of the word. Okay, well, I actually switched off night shifts because I was doing Final Cut Pro 10 stuff on my Mac, and it was slightly altering how the screen looked, and I kind of never bothered to switch it back on again. And you're saying I was actually sensible and wise and in some way healthier?
Well, a little bit. So, but people use dark mode on the phone, for example. I use dark mode on the phone. And using dark mode on the phone is easier on my eyes in darkness, but it doesn't mean that it's good for sleep. Here's the thing. The claim is people have decided that blue light disrupts sleep patterns because it suppresses the production of melatonin. And it does this because it mimics hues and colors that we see during daytime hours. And that's the theory. You know, my ophthalmologist, my eye doctor, has said that, the whole blue light thing is a little bit unscientific because no one's exactly sure which frequencies and no one's really sure exactly what amount of exposure or brightness or you know, what transmission is acceptable because things don't block all blue light. You still see blue on the screen. So there's questions here. But to counter the supposedly ill physiological effects of blue light emitted by devices like iPhone, the feature automatically shifts display colors to warmer temperatures later in the day. That's night shift. And so there was a valid scientific theory about why those things should work, says Dr. Tim Brown, the person who wrote the article for Current Biology and published the study and conducted the research. He says research 20 years ago linked melanopsin, a light-sensitive protein found in the eye, with body clock regulation. As melanopsin better detects short wavelength photons, the system was thought to be more sensitive to blue light. He says now that cone cells in the retina responsible for detecting color are now thought to play a more substantial role in natural sleep patterns. The melanopsin system is fundamentally there to detect brightness. So basically, brightness matters more than color temperature, and just changing to night shift is not going to help you get a good night's sleep because you're still looking at a bright light.
Okay. They could have checked all of this before we started, instead of leading us down this night mode road. Okay.
Basically, if you want to get a really good night's sleep, go to bed the same time every night. This is my understanding from my research, and I worked on sleep products in the past. So you need to go to have a consistent bedtime and bedtime environment. Go to bed at night at the same time every night. Go to bed in darkness. Put your devices down half an hour before you begin to go to bed. Don't have lights and blue lights and devices and stuff in the bedroom. Things like that are going to help you more than putting blue light filters on your phone.
Okay. Does it have to be half an hour? No. Okay.
You need to really make sleep time dedicated for sleep. And introducing light to your face as you're beginning to prepare for sleep is counterproductive.
Oh, sure. But, half an hour before,
Do you want to sleep well or not?
I think I've given up, frankly.
But I figured you had, yes. But for everyone who hasn't given up on life yet.
Oh, giving up on life. This is getting worse every second.
For everyone who hasn't lost hope entirely.
I genuinely look forward to this every week, and this is what happens. Okay.
Ah, William.
For anybody who, so what do? We put the devices down, whole half out. Yeah, I'm going to do that. Definitely. Yes, mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yep. Yep. But it's about brightness. Brightness and eye strain and lights as you're trying to convince yourself to go to sleep. It's about developing good sleep habits, really, is what's going on there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Good sleep habits. All right.
They're important. Hey, you want to do them well. You need to do them habitually.
Okay. Definitely going to do this. Definitely. Yeah.
And the truth is, any other thing that you want to do well, you need to develop good habits for, right?
Oh, sure. Yes, I'll go along with that. Yeah. A little bit every now and again.
For example, if you were, say, a writer, you would need to write frequently, and you would need to create an environment where you could write.
Yes.
Right? You know, you'd need to have your workspace, your desk, or you know, your environment, whether that's sitting in a cabin in the woods or going to a cafe or creating a quiet space. You'd need to make sure that your environment was conducive to writing, and then you'd need to write frequently.
Yes, I'll go on with all of that.
Right. Mm-hmm. In order to be able to practice your craft, you have to create good habits.
Okay, yes.
Okay. But there's a little more to it than that. For example, if you were a writer, you'd also want to read a lot.
Oh, true, yes.
Mm-hmm. Right? And maybe you'd want to learn from other writers.
Yes. Oh, are you offering something here? Is this building
up to... I'm about to.
Okay. Where do I sign up?
Funny you should ask. You should sign up at masterclass.com/Apple Insider.
Okay. I thought it was going to be you. And I was going to have to find a way to back out of this. And funnily enough, what I was thinking was, I know you're good, but you're not as good as Masterclass. Are you? No offense.
Thank you. Oh.
But Aaron Sorkin and Neil Gaiman on Masterclass.
Well, that's what I was getting at, was, you know, if you wanted to learn to write, you could learn from the best. You could have exclusive access to online classes taught by masters of their craft, Neil Gaiman and Aaron Sorkin, for example. Hmm. Right?
Yes, that is true. That is true.
Yes. Have you watched those? Have you watched those masterclasses?
I'm ashamed to say no. You talked about them before, and it's on my list to watch. And actually, although I'm a writer, there's other stuff on there. The Jodie Foster thing about film directing. I mean, she's just so interesting anyway. But there's so many people with so much things. It feels like it's going to be a nice treat over Christmas, is what I'm thinking.
It's not only is it a nice treat over Christmas, it's a nice treat over Christmas for someone else as well. So with over 70 wide-ranging class offerings, there's something there for everyone. And it's an easy way to give a gift that's personal and meaningful. So when you go ahead and take advantage of a Masterclass All Access Pass, you also get to give one to someone else.
Oh, are you building up to telling me what you've got for Christmas?
For a limited time, when you buy one annual Masterclass All Access Pass for yourself, you'll get another one to gift for free. Go to masterclass.com/Apple Insider to get started with this limited time offer. Don't miss your opportunity to get the best deal of the year and buy one All Access Pass and get one free to gift at masterclass.com/Apple Insider. And William, don't tell Angela. That's what I'm getting her this year.
No. Okay. It's better than I'm getting her.
It's a secret just between you and I and 25,000 of our most excellent listeners.
Okay. Right.
Don't let her know.
Okay. I won't. Might change the label on the card at the last moment. I've seen your handwriting.
No, I if I must, I'll get it for you both.
Oh.
But I was intending to get it for Angela.
You can get it for us both, and then we'll get it for you as well. Does that not seem like a good idea?
That's so kind of you. That's really generous.
Thanks. Okay.
I need to let you know that Apple has complaints.
Apple has complaints, as in Apple is complaining about its users not buying enough?
Or... No, No, Apple has complaints. Apple has signed an EU complaint.
I'm sorry, I don't know what that is.
Well, they wrote a letter to the European Commission this week.
Oh, EU, sorry. Okay, yes. Yes.
Have you heard of it? I hear England's leaving.
Yeah, thanks. Right, really, really going off this whole thing. But yes.
They wrote this letter, along with a coalition of tech and automotive companies, to the European Commission, saying that patent licensing abuses are stifling innovation of self-driving cars and other connected devices.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
They weren't alone. There were 27 companies, including BMW, Cisco, Daimler, Dell, Ford, Lenovo, and they all informed the European Union's antitrust watchdog that some unnamed parties are allegedly refusing to license standard essential patents on fair and reasonable terms. Now, they didn't name specifically FRAND, the term FRAND, which means fair, reasonable, non-discriminatory contract laws, but the letter suggests those are the issues. And so, to quote directly from it, it says, the practice of some owners to grant licenses only to certain companies prevents companies across the Internet of Things and related innovative technology industries from planning investments in R&D. This practice stifles innovation, discourages new market entry, and ties suppliers to established customers. As a result, European businesses and consumers may pay higher prices than they would pay in a more competitive market. So we don't know exactly which patents are being held back, and we don't know exactly who it is that is withholding those patents. The letter doesn't really identify the parties involved, but the filing was received by European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen and Commissioners Margrethe Vestager and Thierry Breton shortly after Nokia came under fire for its refusal to license components for autonomous vehicles.
Okay, right.
Now,
I was just hoping it's going to end up with it being Spotify that were doing it.
It's not Spotify. Okay. Spotify and autonomous cars? I mean, it's not impossible, yeah, but
Spotify and the EU, yeah.
Yeah.
There's some historical precedent here. Okay, but it isn't them, so okay.
So we don't know exactly what Apple hopes to gain from this European probe that they want, but it's more hinting that Apple is still developing self-driving car technology.
Yeah, it is ridiculous how much Apple says about cars without ever saying, huh? Cars? Us? Yes. The number of patents, the number of safety reports. I'm going to go out on a limb and say they're definitely working on a car. No, don't try to stop me. Yeah.
So it seems like Nokia is really on the defensive here. So Daimler entered into a binding negotiation on component-level patenting licensing with Nokia. And the EU regulators in the article, that's right, Margrethe Vestager, will not be investigating until the negotiations play out. So for now, it seems like they might even be staying out of it. But Nokia appears to be on the defensive. They have to either come to an agreement on licensing, or they have to allow the negotiations to fail and invite the EU commissioner to step in. So there is...
goodness.
Stuff going on here. Now, it's going to be interesting.
Patent law seems to be just a confusing mess to me, but then what do I know about patent law? So,
yeah. Yeah, well, I mean, the idea is that you want to be able to capitalize on inventions that you own for a period of time. And so you publish them and get the protection that says that they're yours, and you can capitalize on them for a limited amount of time until the patent runs out, and then they can be capitalized on by everybody. And that if someone wants to use it, they have to license it from you. And if they use it without licensing it from you, you can pursue them in court.
Yeah, I get the principle, but it does seem to have fallen apart, doesn't it? Everybody's suing everybody for infringing patents they've never heard of, and then it all goes to appeal, and then everybody settles out of court, and they all do it over again. Is that just a...
Well, that's how this FRAND term came about, right? The idea that things had to be fair and reasonable, that you couldn't license something. So if you own a FRAND patent, you have to license it to anyone willing to pay, and you have to have about the same terms to everyone you license it to. So you can't license it out to one company for a small amount, but when Apple wants to come calling, it can't be 2 times or 5 times or 10 times what everyone else is paying. You have to do it for the same pricing so that it's fair and reasonable, right?
Yeah, with friends like these, who needs enemies? Yes, okay.
Ooh, ooh. Right. Well, with that said...
Okay. It just came out. I can only apologize. Well, I can also stop doing it in future, but for the moment, I can only apologize.
We can stop doing it for now.
Okay, that sounds fair. That sounds quite sensible, yes.
This has been the Apple Insider Podcast. I'm Victor, and William the Freak Gallagher is right over there. William, where can people find you on the internet?
At W the Freak Gallagher and William the Freak at appleinsider.com.
Oh, dear.
Well, near enough. Very, very similar to that. W Gallagher and William at appleinsider.com. Please, love getting emails.
I'm V Marks on Twitter and Victor at appleinsider.com. And I have enjoyed this so much, and I hope to see you all back next week. Thank you for your emails. Thank you for your comments. And I'm so glad you listened.